city, his house. No one beats him in his house. Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports. Now. On the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Write your own songs. Don't steal them from other artists. They're just playing this to tick me off, and it's working.
Let it breathe.
Yeah. You breathe. Just turn it off. Thank you. 5:01 now, Eastern Time. Some different time where you are, probably. Well, maybe not. You could be in Ontario, and it could be the same time. Or Quebec, or wherever else is Eastern Standard Time. We're in Standard Time?
Yep.
Right.
EST. You know the reason Van Halen did all those covers?
I don't want more music talk.
It's because they got so popular, and they had to crank out another album, but they didn't have time to really do any originals, so they did a bunch of covers.
Great. Cheaters.
But thank you for informing me about the Kinks yesterday. I always thought that the Kinks covered Van Halen.
You're such a five-year-old, you know that?
Very well aware of that, Bob.
Tom Tebbutt will join us later in the program. Is he in Australia? Of course he is. It's a major tennis tournament. He goes everywhere. Lee Steinberg will be with us from Steinberg Sports. Don Banks of SI on the... Super Bowl coming up. We'll talk a lot about Katy Perry and her appearance, wearing the same colors as you.
I was going to say, her outfit is fantastic today. Love her choice of colors.
She always looks good, doesn't she?
Yeah, especially today. I walked by the TV and I said, Katy Perry and I are wearing the same outfit.
Cutie pie. And
look at that sense of fashion for our TV viewers. Those colors are fantastic.
Oh yeah, it is the exact same colors as you.
The same thing. Way to go, Katy Perry.
Very cheerleader-ish with the skirt, isn't it? Like old-time cheerleaders?
Very much so.
Yep.
That's great colors. Yeah, I love those colors.
There's the end of Katie. And Katie answered about 20 minutes worth of questions. I don't know what... I'm doing a show. I can't listen.
I thought she just kept saying shout-out, and then she'd say something. Shout-out, say something.
I don't know. Don't know what she said. Also, Glenn Healy of Sportsnet. Will join us later in the program, Hockey Night in Canada or whatever the hell it is. I have great angst over our conversation with Brian Cooper.
Why?
Well, we talked about, you know, they're going to allow U.S. Super Bowl commercials starting in 2017.
Yeah, that's not good.
Well, it's hard to understand how this is going to work. And I'm quite sure Bell and Rogers and Global and everybody else, all the big TV guys are going to yell and scream about this.
As they should.
Well, because, and even if they don't carry the Super Bowl, I know Bell has a long-term deal for the Super Bowl.
Okay.
I have no idea how long it is or how much it's worth or whatever, but I imagine it's substantial. But I think they would be joined by Rogers and Global and other broadcasters in complaining about this, because if you open this door, where do you close it?
Yep, Pandora's box. Can of worms.
It is Pandora's box, and as much as I want to watch the U.S. commercials, as much as a viewer, I'm thrilled about this prospect.
Mm-hmm.
I also understand that there's a business to be run here.
There is a business to be run. One of the things I love about my job, and I'm sure one of the things you love about your job.
Getting paid.
Is getting paid.
Yeah.
And if the commercial's really great.
Well, it's the classic. There's the classic.
And Mean Joe Green. If the commercial's really great, I'm going to eventually see it.
Yeah.
I don't watch the Super Bowl to watch commercials, so who really cares? But apparently a lot of people do. And if you ever go on social media during the Super Bowl or the day after Super Bowl, people are flipping out about, oh, I didn't see the commercials and this cut off. Who cares? Get a life.
Well, no, you can watch them online, and you can actually see a lot of them before the Super Bowl now.
Oh, this GoDaddy thing with the poppy
was
dog.
Released, you know, 2 weeks before the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Who cares? It's not the Cannes Film Festival. It's a Super Bowl ad.
Well, no, I get that, but I want to see it. I'm glad I'm going to be able to see it, but I understand the broadcaster's perspective on this. And I think there's an issue here, and I don't know how to resolve it. Because here's what I do know. If Bell continues to run the Super Bowl on CTV or TSN or wherever they decide to run it, it's their choice. But they are not allowed to block the signal of the U.S. networks coming in. 99.9% of their audience will go to the U.S. networks.
Correct. How are they supposed to make money?
I'm going to go there. You're going to go there. Everybody you know is going to go there.
Mm-hmm.
There'd be no downside. The only reason you wouldn't go is because you can't get the U.S. networks, and I'm guessing an infinitesimally small percentage of people.
That 99.9% you mentioned.
Yeah. Like 0.1% maybe can't get, and I don't even know. I mean, if you're up in, you know, in Whitehorse, I'm sure you got cable or satellite or something you could bring in. I'm sure they get U.S. networks.
Why?
You know, so we're not at the days of the only channel we got is CBC. You know, we're past that now.
And for people that don't know, I mean, in this broadcasting business that we're in, the U.S. it's kind of big, right? It's 10 times the size of Canada population-wise. And
yeah,
you can
that.
Say, oh, the CRTC this, CRTC that. And for the common fan out there that doesn't know, it sounds, you know, like we need to be protected. But we do. Because if they were just to open it all up, and if they do this with the Super Bowl, like you said, Bob, where are they going to stop? And what's...
Well, they're already talking about the Academy Awards, too.
So why the outrage, though? I don't understand. Like, why are politicians doing this? You're going to really sway a guy's vote by saying he
well,
can watch a
really
Doritos
politicians.
Ad?
Politicians. They, you know, they are...
Bureaucrats, whatever they are.
Well...
People who I pay.
Well, and the reason they say they're responding to is they are responding to complaints and a high level of complaints about not being able to see the U.S. commercials during the game. And you know what? I would have stood in that line.
I would have said,
I want to be able to see those commercials. Why can't I see those commercials? Why do I have to watch Canadian commercials that don't have the same impact? Now, the truth is, at midnight or 12:30 in the morning, when the freeloaders leave my house, and the game is over, and I put the chili, the leftover chili, into the plastic containers and put it in the freezer, save it for next year. I go to my computer. I go to one of many sites, and I watch the commercials. And truthfully, more than half of them aren't that great.
I don't care as much as you do. If it's great enough, someone will send it
to
me.
I can go and watch them. It's not like you can't see them. You just can't see them in the game. I'm happy you'll be able to see it in the game, but there's another side to this equation, and anyway.
Can I just make a public plea on behalf of myself and anyone else who, I don't know, seems like a sane person? If you call up your local MP and you complain that you can't watch Super Bowl commercials in Canada, please, there are far better causes out there to get behind than getting to see a Super Bowl commercial on Canadian
TV.
Well,
I'm not convinced this is going to come to pass because I think the networks are going to fight it. And
I hope they do fight it, and I hope they beat it.
I don't know what the answer is. I don't know how you do this.
You know what the answer is? Keep it status quo, baby. And you miss 3 seconds when they come back from a break.
Right.
Live with it.
I will tell you right now who will support this fight, the National Football League. Because whatever Bell is paying is going to be reduced by 99.9%. Their fees to the NFL for the rights to the Super Bowl are going to be diminished based on the reality that they're not going to have an audience anymore.
Well, that's a good thing then, because the NFL, from what I've seen,
they
don't lose a lot of fights.
But they will support this fight. We'll see how it goes. Just, it's really interesting. My first blush was, great, I get to see the commercials. And my second blush was, wait a second, how is this going to work long term?
Yeah, who's going to pay my mortgage? How am I going to pay my mortgage?
Well, I don't have to worry about it because I don't work for Bell. We don't have the Super Bowl rights.
And as if you have a mortgage anyway, Bob, let's be realistic here.
I have a mortgage.
On maybe your fourth home, not your current abode.
No, actually, the other places I don't have any mortgage on, just the big one. Now, as of 11 a.m. today, the cheapest ticket to see the New England Patriots take on the Seattle Seahawks is what? That means the cheapest ticket is going for.
Are you talking on StubHub kind of thing?
We're talking about secondary market. Yeah.
Cheapest. Right now.
Cheapest.
$1,200.
$8,070.
Ugh.
The cheapest ticket available is $8,070.
Is that a single?
A ticket. One ticket. I don't know if it's a single.
Paired up with anybody? That is awful.
Well, you might be two tickets for $16,140.
You know what? If you want to spend $8,070 on a ticket, by all means do it. I'm not fighting you on it. I'm just not going to be fighting you to pay for it. But that's absolutely insane. That has to go down closer to kickoff. I'd be out there bargaining with the scalper going, come on, $6,200. Oh, there's 15 minutes gone to the game so far. $5,600.
Here's a story. There's a lot of stuff in the story, but the last sporting event in which the market saw such a gap between the number of tickets needed to fill orders and the number of tickets available was the 2011 BCS championship game between Auburn and Oregon. As the supply dwindled, resale ticket prices rose, and 5 days before the game, the asking price for a 50-yard line seat rose to more than $10,000 a ticket.
Why this year? Is it because of all the insanity of the last week?
This is a big game.
It's a big game, but I think
it's got a defending Super Bowl champion. It's got the New England Patriots, you know.
It's got evil.
The new America's team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got the hype of last week. Usually the first week of Super Bowl is just made up stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's dead. There's nothing to talk about really. I mean, it was all over the place last week. It was on newscast. This has a chance to be the biggest Super Bowl audience in history. In fact, I'm betting it will be.
I agree with you, and I agree with you because the thing about the Super Bowl is it draws in even the non-casual fan. But this Super Bowl draws in the non-casual fan because of what's going on.
100%. And you have a game that is highly competitive. It's basically a pick 'em. I think New England's a 1-point favorite, but it's in that range. It's not 7 points one way or the other. It's a coin flip. It figures to be a great game, lots of side stories, lots of evil on both sides. More on New England, I suppose. There's lots of interesting stuff going on. $8,070 for the least expensive ticket in the marketplace for the Super Bowl. And we are now 3 days ahead of the game.
I'm selling. I'm selling in a hurry if I have a couple tickets. I wonder what the face value on that $8,000 ticket is.
The cheapest ticket is $1,500 or less.
Face value?
$500.
Okay, so you can get a ticket for $500.
So a $500 ticket's now going for $8,000.
Yeah, that'd be fine. Wow.
So if you'd already flown down there, paid your way, got your hotel and whatever, would you sell the ticket?
No, play
golf?
No, because
watch it on TV.
You know what? If I could do that, I'm rich enough anyway. I probably don't need the extra $7,500 in my pocket.
Yeah, but if you got two tickets, that's $15,000.
It'd be cool if you bought four
US,
and two,
which is like 600,000 Canadian now.
It'd be cool if you had four and two buddies bailed on you.
Yeah.
Or they went too hard on Saturday night and they couldn't make it to the game.
Giddy up. Then you get to go and get it paid for.
Exactly.
The two Canadians, of course, lost in straight sets in the quarterfinals of the Australian Open, which in overall is, you know, it's pretty decent. Mm-hmm. Both of them get there. But I think the expectations have risen a fair bit for both Raonic and Bouchard. Our friend Tom Tebbutt, the host of Aces on our flagship station, is in Australia, in Melbourne, for the championships there. And he joins us on the line. Hello, Tebbutt.
Mr. McCowan, Seattle's going to win. No problem this game. It's not even going to be close. They got that big defense.
You may be right, but I think you're wrong. Okay. Anyway, success. I was going to say success or failure. Well, you can't categorize getting to the quarterfinals for either one of them as failure. But based on their rankings and expectations, they got to exactly where they should have gotten to, and not no further, but where they should have. Is that fair?
Exactly, yeah. No, they're seeded to get to the quarterfinals, and, you know, Raonic loses the number one player in the world, and Bouchard loses the number two player in the world. So no big deal, but I guess it's a little bit the way they lost. I mean, Bouchard really was never in it, really out-hit by Sharapova. She went for it. If she'd made a few shots early, it would have made a difference. And actually, I talked to Rafa's coach yesterday. Same thing with Milos. 3-all, I think, in the first set. He had love 30, a chance maybe to break serve. And he said that, you know, he went for a shot, but he went for a shot with his worst shot, his backhand, and said, I would like to have seen him wait and go for his shot with his best shot, his forehand. So, and he said there's, you know, a few points here and there, but after the first set with Milos, I mean, it was one-way traffic for Djokovic, and that was a bit disappointing because Milos kind of went away or got frustrated or got a bit defeatist. But Milos, none of the other young players did better than him. The one thing on the women's side is that Madison Keys,
yeah,
I think, may have established herself as a better player than Bouchard, so now the pressure is maybe on her a little bit. We'll see how she reacts, but she's a terrific player.
And I watched some of Key's matches, and I was very impressed by her. But I mean, let's be cautious. Bouchard did this consistently during the big events last year, and this is another one where she didn't get to the semifinal or the final, but still a pretty good performance. And she lost to somebody she's never beaten before, so all of this was sort of expected. I'm a little more cautious on Key's than you are. She may be better than Bouchard. Maybe Bouchard hits the wall here, Well, let me ask you this. If you're coaching Bouchard, what does she have to do now to get to that, to move up into that top 2-3? What part of her? I know her serve abandoned her late last year. It was better at Australia, but not as good as it's been in the past. Is that it? Is she have to greater variety in her game? Does she have to come to the net more? What would you say she has to work on now?
Well, it's going to be hard for her to have a greater variety in her game. She's a player who goes for it. As you see by the way she plays, she throws everything into every shot. I don't see her sort of tempering on that. I mean, that's her game. Like watching that match, I remember against Sharapova, she had two points to get back to 3-3 in the first set, and she went for them both shots, and she missed them both long. And she made them. It would have been 3-all. Now, the hope was, your 3-all, Sharapova gets a little tight, doesn't play quite as well. It didn't happen. So it's little things like that. But, I mean, I think she's just got to, you know, maybe get a little fitter. She's still pretty fit at the time, right now. But she's got to get a little fitter, and she's just got to sort of keep going the way she's going playing that game, because I think, you know, she's got to dance with the one that brung her, and that's what goes. And when she starts making those shots, and she has made them, she made them all the way through basically to the, you know, the quarterfinal, then, you know, she's going to beat these players. But she is beating the players she should beat, which is always a good sign.
Sharapova played extraordinarily well against Bouchard, I thought, and then really well in her semifinal as well. I think she actually has a chance to beat Williams. Do you?
Well, I guess so. It's just so hard. It's been more than 10 years, and it's, I think it's 16-2 is the head-to-head, and she hasn't beaten her since 2004 when Sharapova won Wimbledon. Then she won at the Urine Championships later that year. Since then, she hasn't. I mean, she's just got to be psyched out against her. And I was at Serena's press conference yesterday, and, you know, she wasn't saying too much, but you can just sort of tell that, she has the game to beat Sharapova, plus she's got to beat mentally. So, you know, these things do happen. We saw it happen, you know, with Seppi beating Federer. He was like 0-10, and he beat him. So,
yep.
And Serena is struggling a little bit with this sort of bug that she has. I mean, he's got a cold and maybe a little bit upset stomach, whatever. So she could be vulnerable. But, I mean, it just defies logic to think that all of a sudden Sharapova is going to beat her, because there are, you know, a couple of old women who've been around for a while, so you don't think the dynamic's going to change, but there can be surprises. And like you say, Sharapova's playing well, so I think she's in with a shot. But how do you pick against Serena?
Tommy, who's Bouchard going to work with going forward? Because she got rid of her coach last November. She worked with Diego Al at the Aussie Open. Does she know who she's going to be working with as far as coaches goes as we go forward this season?
I don't think she does. I have a feeling, just because of her restless nature and always wanting to get better, and she's so ambitious, that the fact that she didn't make, you know, enormous progress here, that I don't know if Ayala's going to sort of be there going forward. I think she is looking for, you know, one of the superstar coaches, like has been the trend with both the men and the women. I don't know who's out there. I mean, Bouchard can also be difficult to work with. She's very demanding. Do the superstar coaches want to make that kind of commitment? Who knows? But I think she's still looking. I think really she'd like to have somebody who, you know, is a bit like, I mean, Lindsay Davenport has been terrific for Madison Keys. I was watching a little bit yesterday at one point and heard one of the announcers say that apparently when they got together out in California for the first two or three days, they didn't even play tennis. They mm-hmm. just sort of tried to bond, you know, in terms of personality. So it's a tricky thing. But, I mean, Davenport's been great for Keith, no doubt about it. And they play similar games, so that was a perfect fit there. I'm not quite sure who's out there for Bouchard. Maybe we're thinking a little bit these days about a woman, but, you know, maybe she could somehow find a man as well. But I doubt if it's going to be, you know, Yvonne Lendl or Andre Agassi or somebody like that. But, you know, there are players out there who maybe weren't quite as prominent that have the experience and have sort of the stature that she can, you know, admire and maybe listen to a little bit more than she'd listen to if it was somebody that was, you know, more, you know, less sort of storied in terms of their accomplishments.
I should know the answer to this, but is Agassi coaching?
No. No, he's. I guess he really stayed away from tennis. The thing that shocked me about Agassi, and I lost a $100 bet on this once, Bob. I was sure he was going to get into broadcasting because I thought, well, he's going to see what John McEnroe did. I mean, John McEnroe's extended his career by what, 20 years, and
right.
extended his presence and his profile in the sport and even outside the sport with his commentary. And Andre was really, really good at commentary. He did a few things in the booth. I remember in the tournament in Miami, and I just thought, you know, with his foundation, he's trying to raise money all the time. I mean, if he kept himself out there the way McEnroe has, I mean, it would really be terrific for, you know, for his image and for promoting, you know, his schools and everything.
Well, I had him.
He's just content to stay in Vegas.
Yeah, and maybe Steffi's got the leash too tight, but I had him in studio when he wrote the book, live in studio, and he was terrific. You know, he is very comfortable behind the mic. He's got a compelling personality. Now, McEnroe's turned into a terrific broadcaster, I think, but... I think you're 100% right. Andre would be top of the food chain if he wanted to do it. He just clearly doesn't want to. He doesn't seem to want to have anything to do with tennis much anymore.
Sort of, yeah. He played a little bit. I mean, he's got this chronic back and hip. I think he had a surgery, but I still think he's pretty not too good that way. But no, he I find it a real mystery. But, you know, on the other hand, they do have two young kids.
Yep.
And basically, the commitment would be the four Grand Slams, and you know the French is at the end of May, beginning of June, and the Wimbledon's you know end of June, beginning of July. U.S. Open when the kids are going back to school. I don't know. I mean, who knows? But the only thing is, you know, he is getting older. He's into his 40s well now, and you wonder, can he come back now? Does he have quite the profile he would have had if he'd gotten into broadcasting right after he stopped?
Probably not. Probably not. What would a coach make? What would a coach make from a premium player? Like a top five player.
I know at one point Sharapova's previous coach was making $400,000. But I don't think every coach is making that much. But
I can't see Andre or Steffi going out and doing that routine for that kind of money.
Well, it also is a percentage of earnings that is off somewhere around 10 or 15%, I think, for the
still.
Average coach, plus your expenses. So,
still.
Well, I don't think, you know, if you gave him $10 million, would he do it? I mean, does he need $10 million? So I think fundamentally, you know, he doesn't want it, and he's content doing what he's doing. But, you know, I think it's a real loss for the sport because, you know, he had so many people identified with him. He's so well-known. It would have been great if he'd done commentary. McEnroe would have had his grass cut, I think. But and the other guy, a little bit, too, and he doesn't have – quite the image is Andy Roddick. He's a bit of a smart ass, but he's a bright guy. He's got a good sense of humor. I don't know if maybe sometime soon he'll move into broadcasting as well. I guess we'll have to wait and see, but he obviously hasn't done it because he's been out for 3 years now.
Yeah.
Tom, what makes Eugenie maybe hard to work with for some coaches? Is it because of all this off-court stuff? She's very marketable, but does she listen? Is she a good listener when it comes to learning the game?
Oh, well, I think she's a good listener. You know, she always wants to improve, but, I mean, she's just very demanding. I mean, she's, you know, she said she doesn't want to have any friends in the tour, so she's a little bit aloof from everybody else out there, which doesn't make it that easy in terms of, you know, just like Madison Keys is as bright as the sun in a press conference, she's, you know, yakking away and all that stuff. Bouchard is a little more guarded. I mean, she has the sort of the master plan of, you know, being like Sharapova. She, you know, she made it known that Sharapova's her idol. And Sharapova was like that when she was younger. So I think she's following a little bit in the Sharapova path of removing herself from everybody else. And that way she's, you know, maybe just not the easiest one to be around because she's not that sociable on the tour. And anybody who might want to coach her might know that. But on the other hand, she does that. You don't really have to motivate her because she's so ambitious, as I said. And, you know, she showed that she has the goods in getting the Wimbledon final at the age she did. And the consistency she's shown is obviously somebody that you might want to coach. But like I said, no, she's demanding. She's a little bit apart by herself, and you're going to have to, you know, be probably a little bit more indulgent and tolerant than you would with, say, somebody like an easygoing Madison Keys.
I would say to you that I think it's still unlikely that Eugenie Bouchard will ever be number one, and I say that with all sincerity, even though I'd be rooting for that to happen. I've had that opinion on Milos Raonic for quite some time. Now, I understand that the top four are not getting any younger, and there's going to come a time when Raonic is still playing pretty well, and those guys can't do what they currently do. I continue to suggest, though, I'm not sure there's more that we should expect from Milos Raonic. I think what we're getting is about the best we're going to get. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I would say Bouchard has a better chance to be number one just on what we've seen so far. I mean, the thought I would have about Milos is that, you know, he's 6'5". He's got this big serve game. If you look back at the big serve games, the guys like Goran Ivanišević, maybe Richard Krajicek, the guys who get to be number one have all been in the 6'2", 6'3", 6'1" category, like Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, Murray sort of the same thing. And the sort of guys who are the outliers, like Raonic, that little bit bigger, and especially having that sort of specialized game, don't seem to have the consistency over time to accumulate the points you need to be number one. But on the other hand, I don't think there's any question with what Milos has. One Grand Slam, maybe particularly at Wimbledon, he gets it going. He's going to be very, very hard to stop.
Tom, this may seem like a strange question, but at this point in time, has the success of Milos' serve over the years, has it hurt him almost in the fact that his game perhaps isn't as well-rounded as it should be right now?
I mean, his game's never going to be well-rounded. I mean, he's like, you know, I mentioned Ivanišević. I mentioned other guys who've had, like, the big serve. That's the game he has. He's not going to become a smooth-stroking, you know, beauty like Federer mm-hmm. or an athletic marvel like Djokovic sort of thing. He's got to take what he has, which is by far, well, no, by far maybe a bit much, but the greatest serve in the game right now. And that's his weapon, and what he has to do is sort of build the game around it. And if you saw the match against Federer in Brisbane a couple of weeks ago, he played phenomenal from the baseline. I mean, he was really great. So he's capable of it. So he just has to sort of round out his game and sort of add to the serve. But the serve is always going to be the basis of it because guys get weak in the knees playing him. I mean, mm-hmm. you got to hold your serve because you're not going to break Milos.
Real quickly before we let you go, I think we've established you like Williams in the on the women's side. Who do you like on the men's side?
Well, I think Wawrinka's playing very well, but I just don't see he's 1-15 against Djokovic since 2007, and he was 0-12 last year against Nadal, and he won, so I don't see it happening again. In the final, I'd have to go with Djokovic. Just a bit of a warning here. Murray and Djokovic is the worst matchup in terms of entertainment value of all these top four guys. Hopefully it's better if it does happen on Sunday.
Have fun. Enjoy the weekend, and thanks a lot as always. We'll see you soon.
Okay, Bob.
There is Tom Tebbit. He is the host of Aces and longtime tennis correspondent, writer, and broadcaster. When we come back, Lee Steinberg will join us. And we'll talk about a whole bunch of things, including the Super Bowl. This is Primetime on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan. Let's go! Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcasts at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. On demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
A lot of 60s stuff lately. It's a thing. You have a thing going on here.
Van Halen wasn't around in the 60s.
It's a Kinks thing.
This is a cover of a Van Halen song by the Kinks.
If you use that phrase one more time, I'm going to come over there and drill you. 24 minutes before the hour. Later in the program, Don Banks of Sports Illustrated will join us. He's at the Super Bowl. No, I don't know that for a fact, but I'm sure he's at the Super Bowl. Sure he is.
He said he was going.
Glenn Healy of the NHL and Sportsnet is not at the Super Bowl. Mm. And he'll be joining us from probably his house. Unless he's working tonight. Does Healy work Thursdays? No. Doesn't work Thursdays, does he?
A lot of games tonight.
Yeah, but we have a lot of people.
That's apparently, very true.
Apparently hockey people have no endurance. You know, they work one or two nights a week and then have to rest for the rest of the time.
Speaking of resting, did you watch that Leafs game last night? Oh, man.
Well, no, it was unwatchable.
It was sleep-inducing. That was horrible.
No, I watched the Raptors game and flipped over a few times.
Ugh. I get paid to watch.
I watched more of Washington-Pittsburgh than I did the Leafs and the Devils. And I don't care about either of those two teams.
Can't blame you.
just bad hockey.
It was just awful.
We are waiting to connect with Lee Steinberg of Steinberg Sports.
Is that, I don't know about you.
World's most famous agent.
Yes. I watch sports to be entertained, and that was not entertaining. But there's people there,
Why
Bob.
Why else would you watch?
There were people there, Bob, who paid money to watch that product. And the guys are saying, you can hear Daniel Winnick on the ice. I hope you could, because it was just, it was soccer on ice.
Well, it's New Jersey. Are they home tonight against Phoenix? I guess they must be.
They are home tonight against Phoenix.
Yeah, they wouldn't travel all the way to Phoenix.
Weather permitting. It's pretty nasty out there.
It's not that bad.
I know. I'm making conversation.
You're from Pictou County.
Yeah.
Snow's there.
It does?
They got a bunch of snow and more coming. They got a couple of nor'easters by.
Well, the old man hasn't put out his back yet, but as soon as he does, that's when I know it's snow too much.
I'm telling you. We're waiting for him to hand the phone to him. How long does that take? Apparently, it takes a long time.
That's when you know you're big time, when someone hands the phone to you. Your call's in, they walk over, they give you. Do you have a direct cell phone that you carry, or do people walk around and hand you stuff when people call for you?
No, very few people call my cell phone because I don't give that number out. Because I don't answer it. I every day I have to turn it off to come into the studio.
Mm-hmm.
And more often than not, I don't turn it back on.
Good for you.
So if people do call, all they get is the answering machine. Well, after a while.
They get the point.
You get the message. Like, you can call this number, but I'm not answering it, probably. And it may take me days to check my messages.
I beg with people now. Don't, unless it's important, don't leave me a voicemail, because I rarely check my voicemail. It's just a thing now with the kids. It's all texting.
Well, I'm like a 10-year-old that when parents give them their first cell phone, it's for emergencies. I have the phone in case I'm in the middle of nowhere and I need to call for help.
That's basically what my dad uses his for, too.
Well, that's what I use it for. Yeah. I don't need, I have a BlackBerry. You know, whatever it's called,
one of the new ones, BlackBerry something,
and I can do all the things everybody else can do on the phone, and I don't do them.
So you don't sit there tweeting out pictures and.
If I had a $5 cell phone, where you could do
the flip phone,
all you could do was make calls and take calls. I'd be fine with that.
Me too. You know, that's the purpose of the telephone. Now you're carrying around a computer in your pocket, basically.
Well, yeah, I don't look at my emails on my cell phone. I don't look at Twitter on my cell phone. I don't look at anything on my cell phone except occasionally when I think of it, I better check to see if anybody called. Now, I've never had one of those calls. It's urgent. Please call now.
Mm-hmm.
From 3 days ago.
Right. Now, if you had a cell phone.
So I'm not even sure that you need a cell phone. For emergencies, I think you could figure out another way to get around it. Like, I managed to survive 50 years on the planet without a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
I was okay.
I love the pre-cell phone era because if you told somebody, I'm going out and I'll be back in 5 hours, you could go out and come back in 5 hours without having 19 phone calls with them within those 5 hours.
That's why I don't give the number out, generally speaking.
But then maybe we're trying to get Lee on a landline. Maybe that's what's going on. Trying to get Lee Steinberg on a landline.
Well, the producer's just sitting on the phone there, and apparently he's waiting for them to hand. So Lee is on with another radio station is what's happened here.
Oh, really? I thought he was probably just enthralled by all this Katy Perry news at the Super Bowl
today. Why are you talking to somebody else? Why don't you call Lee? Doesn't Lee have a cell phone? Lee has people now? Really?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Why don't you have people if Lee has people?
It's not a competition between Lee Steinberg and I.
Well, you're
never
two,
has been.
You're two pretty big wheels.
I'm not a big wheel.
Well, Lee has the Jerry Maguire movie, and you had the documentary.
Yeah, well, there you go. That tells you everything. There's the comparative.
Yeah?
You know.
You had me at Get Out of the Studio, Ken.
You got a movie.
Yeah.
I like a movie.
I think there should be a movie about you. Who would play you in a movie, Bob?
Redford.
See, I'm going with Kevin Nash again because you're just an intimidating presence.
Who's Kevin Nash?
Diesel from the WWF. You're an intimidating presence. You're a big man. Nobody messes with you. You command a room when you walk into it.
Really? He's got to bring it back to the WWF? Really?
Look, he's probably...
That's the best you can do?
I'm sure he's quite a thespian because, I mean, it is sports entertainment, so he's a bit of an actor. I think he could pull it off. Or Ric Flair. You and Ric Flair, because Ric Flair, he's got the charisma. He's limousine riding, jet flying. You guys kind of have the same haircut.
No, he's not. He's got blonde hair.
But it's the same style.
No, it's not.
He could... I bet you naturally Ric Flair's hair is probably much like yours.
Yeah, Ric Flair's not an actor. Why do you keep going with wrestlers?
Flair's an actor.
Is this all you can associate with?
I bet you 50 cents Ric Flair
card
was...
Card collectors and wrestlers.
I bet you 50 cents Ric Flair was probably on an episode of Walker, Texas Ranger.
And 90s bands.
Yeah.
This is your life.
That is my life. It's sad. It's pathetic.
It's terrible. I don't know how your wife puts up with you.
I don't know either.
Why did she marry you anyway?
Money. She thought I had some.
Oh, then it was too late after she found out, huh?
It's too late, yeah.
That's a shame. What are we doing
now? Oh, you're getting news.
We got him finally?
Yes.
Holy cow. Here's Lee Steinberg. Where the hell you been? I've been filling here like crazy for you.
My phone died, so I just borrowed one.
Well, glad to have you on. What are you, on the floor at the Super Bowl and Radio Row?
I am on Radio Row, which is, like everything else, now become larger than life. They actually are having fans pay to come in and see the radio shows go ahead and broadcast to the world.
That's ridiculous.
Lee, you just made Bob think of an entire new revenue stream right there.
I've been there before. I've been to Radio Row. It bores me to tears, and I still don't understand why they do it, but it's the Super Bowl, and they do all kinds of crazy things. So, let me clarify something. You have no association with Marshawn Lynch, Lee, do you?
No, other than the fact that I went to Cal and he went to Cal.
Okay, there you go. So we have same alma mater. Now, if you represented him, let me start with this. What would you say to him and this act that has been going on the last few years?
You know what's ironic about the fact that last year Richard Sherman torqued his way into national branding, and this year Marshawn Lynch is having the same effect, dominating Super Bowl through not talking. The first thing I would say to him is, do you understand that this is a public entertainment where fans have to support it? It's not bread and butter on the table. It's not transportation. It's discretionary spending. You're competing with baseball, basketball, home box office, Walt Disney World, every other form of entertainment spending.
Right.
And so if you don't want to graciously interact with the media, or you don't want to sign autographs, you don't want to comport yourself in a good public way, play in the sandlot. No one will ask you anything, but it's right there in your contract. There's a whole clause called publicity that says you agree to go ahead and do these things when the NFL asks. You signed it, you accepted the money. But moreover, Marshawn, if you really care about your charity, which seems to be important to you, you now have 3,500 writers in front of you. You can make a difference. I'd probably about get to the bottom of what kind of anxiety this all was, because it's not as if he's taking a stand, you know, that's going to cause peace in the Middle East or an end of climate change. The stance is, I don't choose to do what every other player has to do. And without media, our whole sports business would be a tiny shadow of what it is. If all you could see is what was shown on games, you'd probably have one-tenth the following.
You know, the interesting part about this is I'm told that in high school, in college, and early in his NFL career, he actually was a talker. He may not have been the greatest interview, but he conducted himself in a manner than the manner you would have expected. And I think we're all grown-ups, and we understand that some people are good at it, at being interviewed, and some people aren't. And the interesting thing is, if you're not good at it, people won't come back to you and essentially will leave you alone, which seems to be his objective. Conversely, what has happened here is by taking this adamant position of being defiant, he's attracted more interest in himself, more attention to himself, more notoriety, and it counteracts any notion of wanting to be left alone. And well, I don't understand that.
Well, there's that. Something must have happened to him in Buffalo, but I'd sit down with him and say, look, do you have anxiety about multiple reporters being out there? Why don't we have you sit here and the three of us will play reporters? Why don't we? I mean, there are ways to work with whatever this is. And he does reasonably well in one-on-one interviews, so it must be the group. But the point is, when you were making the point about drawing attention to himself, the reality is it's taking away attention from his teammates, the Patriots, and the game itself. So that I've just done Radio Row, probably done 30 interviews in the last 2 days. Every single time Marshawn Lynch comes up as the subject.
Right.
And what really you'd like to see is, gee, will New England be able to establish enough of a running game to keep the defensive him from having to throw 50 times a day into right. the defensive secondary? And will Lynch be able to run against the other guys to take the pressure off of Russell Wilson? And this is a great game. And actually, it's the most evenly balanced game with no favorite I can remember in a long time. So, it's coming off an amazing win that Seattle had. So, it is. Not much has gone the way the NFL has wanted it to go.
Yeah, for sure.
Except the fact that the game is more popular than ever on television and at the gate and then fantasy sports.
What I find strange about this whole Marshawn Lynch thing is I don't like it. Bob, you don't like it. Lee, you don't like it. But I think there's a younger generation out there that kind of thinks he's cool. They kind of think this is maybe how you should conduct yourself.
Absolutely. This is the whole... You know, Miley Cyrus twerking. It's the whole, you know, slight libertarian or young generation tweaking itself at authority. It's some people's way of expressing their antipathy towards the way the NFL has handled things this week. There's a long culture in America of the lone man fighting against the system, you know, the big wicked system. But here... Bob made the best point. All you have to do is be boring and you'll never have the problem again.
That's right.
Never go back.
Well, we rebelled in the 60s, you know? I mean, the 60s were a big era for young people, college students rebelling. And we rebelled against war. We rebelled against all kinds of things. And
student body president of Berkeley when Ronald Reagan was governor.
There you go.
I totally remember, but there were a few principles there. And positive things that we wanted to try to change.
Yeah, I don't know how much we changed, but we were rebellious, and maybe it is. Maybe it's just a young people thing. I would have thought he's sort of past that, but maybe not. Anyway, easy to ignore. Lee, we got to get out of here. You probably have about 15 more interviews to do. We'll let you do that. We always enjoy talking to you. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the game. And thanks a lot for taking a few minutes.
My pleasure.
Talk to you again. Lee Steinberg. President of Steinberg Sports, at one time America's number one sports agent, and maybe back on his way to that lofty title again. We got another hour to come. Don Banks will join us from the Super Bowl, and we'll talk about the game.
The actual game?
Well, I think we'll talk about the game. We'll talk about other things as well. Find out if he got to say hello to Katy Perry.
Mm-hmm. By the way, guys,
very important to you.
Guys behind the glass told me that Ric Flair does have acting experience. He was on an episode of Baywatch.
Nobody that was on Baywatch has any acting experience. Before or after. Glenn Healy of the NHL on Sportsnet also. It's prime time on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Don't hassle the Hawk.